This is The Year in Review, 2016, from Brownfield Ag News. Profit margins have dwindled for cattle and hog producers this year. Megan Grebner has a closer look at the tumultuous livestock economy in 2016.
A livestock market specialist says the hog market held pretty steady for the first half of 2016. Ron Plain, professor emeritus at the University of Missouri, says that is a good thing.
We've done well on prices. They've moved up fairly steadily this spring. They often do, but it looks like they're going to go still higher.
He tells Brownfield the primary reason for the move upward was because there weren't as many hogs available as were originally anticipated. But despite a lousy January, economist Steve Meyer with EMI Analytics said prices held on. But the speculation continued about the fourth quarter crunch on shackle space and what that could do to hog prices.
When you see October futures at 68 and December at 63, we think those are prices you should be taking some of and get some hogs priced. And we really think these hogs in the upper 70s for the summer are probably real good pricing opportunities too. I don't see cash beating those by much, if at all.
America's pig farmers continue to produce record-breaking numbers of market hogs week after week this year, and hog prices continued to decline. Now, the hog market wasn't the only protein sector to see volatility in the markets. Many beef producers hadn't seen a profit since December of 2014. But Purdue University ag economist Michael Langemeyer says 2016 was better.
Well, what they're showing us for May and the next few months is if we don't see further price declines or if prices are close to forecasted prices, we're looking at a situation that's a lot closer to break even with possibly even some small profits per head. And that's certainly good news after this long period of losses.
And continued reduction in feed costs helped contribute to the improved outlook. As the year winds down, the cattle industry is hoping the next few months will bring market stability and profitability. Randy Block, CEO of the cattle market advisory service, Cattle Facts, thinks the extreme volatility in the cattle market will subside heading into 2017.
I think we're getting closer to that time period where we can see some stability there. Once we see stability for the cattle feeder in the form of positive margin, then you'll see that come back to the stocker and cow-calf man.
Reporting for Brownfield, I'm Megan Grebner.
Positive outlook seemed few and far between in 2016. There are glimmers of hope for crop commodities. Demand is good, and South America's production hit a bump in the road last season. But farm income is down, and although prospects are better, it's still not where farmers make money. The bottom line, there was not a lot of good news in the ag economy in 2016. Brownfield's Ken Anderson looks at the grain and soybean side of the picture.
Overall, 2016 was a tough year economically for grain and soybean producers. Except for a stronger-than-expected late spring rally, the market spent most of the year at or below break-even levels. Farmers continue to look for ways to reduce input costs. At the Farm Progress Show in Iowa in early September, while there was not much interest in the big-ticket items, farmers were looking for ways to become more efficient and improve their bottom line.
I am really looking actually at something over in the, on the planter side, something for next spring, something to improve my starter fertilizer placement and helping the crop get off to a better start.
I have a chisel plow that I'm looking for some kind of a leveler on the back. I've got one on there now, but I'm looking to see if there's something better. I got some ideas on that. And then just some smaller stuff technology-wise.
Been looking at augers to increase unload amounts and shorten up the time between the bins and the combine. I did stop and talk to a couple people about strip till. I'm interested in that and have been trying a little bit, but possibly looking at buying a unit for myself.
Meanwhile, farm lenders continued to be cautious.
There are some folks who are going to be okay, and others are going to have to make some decisions about what's best for them and what's best for the bank. But we're out trying to be proactive with communications and making suggestions about what might look best going into the future. So, but yeah, there's definitely issues out there.
That was Nebraska Bankers Association President Jerry Catlett speaking with us at Husker Harvest Days in mid-September. Farmland values also continued their slow but steady decline in 2016. But even with all of those concerns, the year ended on a more positive note. Crop yields were excellent across much of the country. Inputs, especially fertilizers and chemicals, were coming down in price. And the markets saw a December rally. Those factors combined to improve farmer attitudes heading into 2017. I'm Ken Anderson.
When prices are in the tank, it seems as if they stay for too long. That's been the case with the low ebb in dairy prices. Brownfield's Nicole Heslop reports that a global dairy consultant warned at the beginning of 2016 that it could be a year before milk prices improved for farmers.
French consultant Christophe Lafouge with JIRA told Brownfield there are four main factors weighing on the global dairy markets.
One of them is the withdrawal of China for buying whole milk powder. They've decreased by 50% in 1 year. The second factor is the embargo, the Russian embargo. That's left something like 250,000 tons of cheese without a room.
He said the end of European milk quotas and the strengthening U.S. dollar were also limiting global trade. Brownfield's Larry Lee has more on how the year played out for dairy farmers.
By March, over half of all licensed dairy farms enrolled in USDA's Dairy Margin Protection Program. Minnesota Congressman Colin Peterson said the Dairy Margin Protection Program created in the 2014 Farm Bill wasn't working.
We've had discussions now with some of the leaders, I have with some of the leadership of National Milk and so forth, about looking at an $8 sweet spot and maybe raising the guarantee at the bottom that you don't have to pay for to $5.
Peterson said MPP is meant to serve as an insurance program for producers, but many had still not enrolled. The cry from the dairy industry continued when National Milk Producers Federation Chairman Randy Mooney told the House Subcommittee on Livestock and Foreign Agriculture the dairy safety net is not helping farmers as intended, especially in the depressed ag economy. The Missouri dairy farmer said he believes the margin protection program is for the future, but it needs some improvements.
For many farmers, the current program is simply not enough to protect them in this economic environment. Since the Farm Bill was signed into law, MPP margins have fallen 52%, with further declines expected.
By May, the USDA was projecting revenues from milk sales would drop to their second lowest level in the last decade in 2016. By August, some help was coming for U.S. dairy producers from the USDA. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack said he's taken action to help struggling dairy producers by dealing with the surplus of cheese, which he told Brownfield was at the highest level in 30 years.
So in an effort to try to provide help and assistance and to complement the work that we've done with the Margin Protection Program, we're announcing a purchase of about 11 million pounds of cheese that will be used for food banks and pantries to help struggling families who are struggling financially with their food assistance and food help.
That's 20 million of purchases that Vilsack said should help the market a bit. In October, the USDA announced plans to buy more surplus cheese. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack said the USDA would purchase an additional $20 million of cheddar to reduce a record surplus and assist food banks and other food assistance recipients. For Brownfield, I'm Larry Lee reporting.
Thanks, Larry. As the year wound down, hope started to emerge for dairy farmers. Michigan State University ag economist Chris Wolf told Brownfield at an ag credit conference the dairy market is expecting a strong recovery in 2017.
New Zealand is down in milk production. Australia is down dramatically in milk production. And it looks like the European Union is really slowing down.
He said increasing incomes in the global middle class is one of the best demand factors that will continue to support U.S. prices. However, he said 2016 was a bad financial year for dairy farmers.
Not only has milk price been low in 2016, but the cull cow price, the Deakin calf price related to the beef price have been low, and also crop prices are at best break even at this point.
Wolf said with continued low milk prices, some farmers may have difficulty getting operating loans next year or have even decided it's time to exit the business. For Brownfield's Year in Review, I'm Nicole Heslop.
Renewable fuels made from grains and soybeans have had a huge impact on commodity markets since gaining public and political support decades ago. Thanks to the work of commodity organizations and government subsidies, production of ethanol and biodiesel is in the billions of gallons annually and counting. 2016 was another active year for the biofuels industry. Brownfield's Ken Anderson looks back.
The year began with the ethanol industry in a bit of a slump as a sharp drop in the price of oil lowered the price that ethanol producers receive for their product. At the Iowa Renewable Fuels Summit in January, Todd Becker, CEO of Green Plains Energy, said it was a tighter margin structure than the industry had seen in quite some time.
I think it's making it more challenging than it ever has in the past. You know, we just have to show that we can compete, and it's the job of the agricultural markets to go down to a level that can compete head-to-head with oil again.
The industry also had its hands full on the policy side as it fought to convince the EPA to raise the 2017 renewable fuel standard, renewable volume obligations for conventional biofuels back to statutory levels. The EPA's proposed ethanol volume for 2017 was 200 million gallons less than the 15 billion gallons called for by Congress. On June 9th, the EPA held a hearing in Kansas City to discuss that proposal. Missouri farmer Dale Samp testified that the original volume could be produced.
We have the capacity. We have the corn. I'm a corn farmer. What's good for the ethanol business reflects back on my business.
Congress also got into the act during a House Energy Subcommittee hearing in late June. Chet Thompson, president of the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, made it clear where his group stood.
The time has come for Congress to repeal the RFS and let the biofuels industry stand or fall on its own, like all the other industries in this country.
But the biofuel industry's lobbying efforts paid off. In late November, the EPA increased the RVO back to statutory levels. Renewable Fuels Association President Bob Dineen said it sent a very positive signal to the marketplace.
I think you'll see a revitalization of the next generation of biofuels as a result of this rule.
There were some concerns, however, over some of President-elect Donald Trump's selections to fill key administration posts. Individuals with strong ties to big oil, including Texas Governor Rick Perry for Energy Secretary, Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt as EPA Administrator, and ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson as Secretary of State. But RFA's Dineen says he was not overly concerned. He says Trump has made it clear on several occasions he supports ethanol and renewable energy.
He wants to see ethanol being used. He sees renewable fuels as a part of our nation's energy future.
I'm Ken Anderson.
John Perkins is our regular market reporter for commodities at Brownfield Ag News. John, I want to talk to you a little bit about this year's market. Give me an overview of what happened this year in commodities.
Tom, really, in a lot of ways, 2016 was a tale of two crops, at least for corn and soybeans, specifically the crops in South America first, where after the trade dialed in what could have been record production for Argentina and Brazil late last year, early this year, all of a sudden, the weather maybe didn't turn out the way many had expected. There were some initial weather forecasts that were a little bit more dire than what some had been predicting, and then those ended up coming true, reducing production in both Argentina and Brazil, and having a big impact on U.S. prices, supporting them quite a bit, namely because of export competition. The U.S. is a big exporter, of course, of soybeans, soybean products, and corn, but a lot of the gaps are typically filled in by Argentina and Brazil, and once those crops weren't there, the U.S. had to step in. That did draw down supplies late last marketing year, but that was lessened a little bit once U.S. production got underway. Now, there were some weather issues during planting, during development, and then during harvest, but overall, record U.S. production for both corn and soybeans this year, depressed prices as we got later on in the year. However, demand continues to be a big loss-limiting factor for both corn and soybeans and should continue to be going forward. But again, a lot of the way commodities are going to perform, have performed, and are going to perform depends on production in South America.
John, whenever I read the reasons about why the market's doing what it's doing, even if it's down, I'm reading good demand, good demand. Okay, give me the impact of what demand is doing.
Tom, a lot of what demand did this year was it kept corn and soybean futures prices, at least, from falling too far. In a normal year, we would have seen a very, very large bearish impact on both corn and soybean prices throughout the course of the year if there was record U.S. production. However, this year, as harvest progressed, prices did show a lot of resiliency because of feed, food, and fuel inputs, and export demand was a huge, huge impact, especially for soybeans, but also for corn this year.
John, we haven't talked about wheat. What's it going to take to turn wheat from bearish to bullish?
Frankly, it would either take a disastrous crop year or several years of reduced U.S. production, especially taking into account what are more than likely record wheat crops this year from Russia and from Australia, two very big export competitors, and Canada's crop is also up considerably over the past year.
The only thing we haven't talked about yet is livestock futures. John, what do you think about them?
The word of the year in 2016 for cattle futures is volatility. They did respond well to record high prices around the middle of the year, but sold off fairly quickly as the year went on. Still managed to maintain pretty decent levels for both live and feeder cattle. Beef demand's held up very well over the past year or so. And as much as anything, both are continuing to keep an eye on what should be good beef demand as we head into 2017.
So as for lean hogs?
Hogs really took it on the chin this year in a lot of regards, seeing a lot of pressure from much larger than expected market ready numbers, larger than what had been implied in many of the past quarterly hogs and pigs reports. Again, though, we're seeing demand as being a loss limiting factor here. The thing is, at least for hogs, those market ready numbers are going to have to come down a lot faster in order to have a really positive effect on the futures.
Every year toward the end of the year in review program on Brownfield Ag News, we take some time to visit with Jerry Passer, livestock reporter for Brownfield. One thing that maybe isn't quite as rosy is if you look back on the year 2016 in general for livestock prices, what happened?
Well, you know, we saw in the cattle market, Tom, 2015 pretty much continued into 2016. You know, we saw some crash almost in the markets in the third quarter as far as the beef is concerned. And then we saw a rally again in the fourth quarter. Now, we did see some recovery of about 12 to 15% since October, and the feeder cattle also up about 10 to 12%. And we've seen those calf prices increased about 25% since the October low too. But, you know, we saw big slaughter numbers throughout the year. We saw lower prices all the way around. We saw cattle weights were higher, and those are starting to come down some. So I think we're seeing a little better prospect as we go into 2016, Tom.
Jerry, what can you tell me specifically about the hog market?
Oh, I think the thing there, Tom, is those record slaughter numbers. We saw the numbers this past week just huge.
You had mentioned that plant capacity is being stretched. There are a couple of plants coming online. You have an extensive history in this livestock market. Do you think they're going to get some relief from the new plants coming on?
Well, they definitely should, because they're stressed to capacity, Tom, and it's going to take a couple of new plants with pretty good capacity to meet with this production. And if producers continue to increase their herd size, we're going to see that new capacity also may not be enough, and we'll have to look at other plants coming online in the future.
Thank you, Jerry. We'll let that be the last word. As is always the case, there are too many stories, so little time. Thank you to Mark Dorenkamp, Larry Lee, Megan Grebner, John Perkins, Julie Harker, Ken Anderson, Nicole Heslip, Jerry Passer, Andrew Flynn, Promotions Coordinator Shannon Yokley, and Executive Producer Cindy Young. Thank you for listening and for all you do. On the 2016 Year in Review, I'm Tom Stever, Brownfield, Ag News for America.